Hey friend, it's David Nabinsky here in Brooklyn. Here at the Portfolio Career Podcast, we help you take ownership of your career and design a life that you want to live. This episode and conversation is with Paul Millard. Paul is the author of a popular book called The Pathless Path and the author of a newer book called Good Work. You may remember Paul from episode 186 that was published in 2021. It was so fun to reconnect with Paul. And this summer, Paul and I had a phone call that was really impactful for me and it led to a new project. Thank you, Paul. In this episode, you'll learn about that phone call, what has happened since, when people usually decide to leave a job and take a leap on their own, podcasting, staying in the game, and so much more. As always, you can learn more about the podcast on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my Substack newsletter that I send out every 2 weeks, if not more. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Paul. Paul, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. 4 years later. Still in the game, haven't quit.
Both of us. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. I knew you, I feel like you were one of the people that early on I was like, oh, he's not going to quit. There's just something about the way people approach something. I think it's usually like they're making choices that are not directly maximizing obvious things like metrics or views or things like that. It's just like, oh, it's just love of the game there.
Yeah, definitely was not. I mean, there's been moments where people have been like, how about TikTok? How about you? And it's like, I'm like, am I having good conversations? Am I, you know, creating more work? Like I've been obviously been able to build on top of it with like these different events and things like that. But it's like, is it fueling me? Is it getting better? Like in my kind of terms or in my kind of, my kind of view. I mean, they're like, it obviously takes time and things don't just like happen quicker, but like, things are getting better and like no one has said, hey, you don't have a YouTube channel, so I'm not going to be on your show, you know? So it's so like, I'm just going to keep doing my stuff. And thankfully it keeps working. It's funny how like, and then, but
I didn't know you didn't have a YouTube channel. I'm out. I'm leaving.
All right, y'all. We did a 2 minutes. That was a short. Yeah. Well, you thought that I had paused. You had like a comment. I don't. What was behind that?
Did I? Probably just wasn't seeing it. Mm. I think that there's just so much content now. I think one of the flaws of my natural proclivities is I love consuming enormous amounts of information, and so I'm subscribed to like 490 Substacks now, and then God knows how much other things. And so I think I hit a tipping point in which I literally subscribed to so much that I just don't even look at any of it anymore. And so I think also I do a hard reset of my podcast listening. I'll just delete everything and take a break from podcasts for a month and then add back stuff slowly. And I think I probably just like didn't add yours back at one point.
Nah, all good. I think it's...
Well, that's actually what happened.
Honored that it was subscribed. I think I'm internalizing that too around like algorithm shifts.
Like, oh, it's changed so much.
Am I promoting the show enough? Like, am I promoting other things? Am I like, you know, that was, you know, these days I think I'm, you know, talking about events type stuff more than like, I think from when we spoke first, and definitely like before then, it was like the podcast was like the main thing for me. And now it's like, it's changed my life and continues to change my life, but it's like not the main thing, you know?
How has it changed your life? I'm interviewing you now.
Like so much of like my last, like so much of the work that I do is connected to it. Right. Like, and obviously we'll get into, you know, Internet Serendipity World Tour that, you know, you introduced me to Will. Like if you and I didn't have a relationship, I don't think that you would have introduced us.
and prior projects and
That's
jobs.
awesome.
So, I mean, well, I that's it's been awesome to me, and I love how you're like, hey man, that's cool that what you all have been doing, and I'm like so grateful for it because, like that's what happened. You were like, we had a curiosity conversation, which I think I that's so that's how podcasting has changed my life, is like continue to meet people, continue to create things, and like the yes, and it's happening, still happening now, and it's been happening for years, where so much of the work that I've been doing has been like connected to people that I've chatted with on the pod.
Yeah, I think what works for you and is something a lot of people actually struggle with is you have personality format fit. And so having the podcast sort of fits in the flow of your life. I think also just being a super connector in New York sort of works really well with it. I mean, I've probably sent like 50 people your way. They're like, oh, I'm moving to New York. I need to meet people. I'm like, just connect with David Nabinsky and do that. And so you actually create a lot of like trust in the world by actually living out and like connecting people. And so if you're asking me to connect with other people you want to interview, I'm going to do that for you. Whereas I'm at the point where I do get too many requests and I just won't do it. For certain people, or like some people have just started a pod like a month ago. I want to support early creators, but I don't just want to do a podcast that somebody's going to stop doing in 2 months or not even publish the episode. And so, a big thing for me with podcasts, I started in 2017 too, is I'm just so curious. I love learning, I love connecting with people, I love conversations with people. And so, I will pretty much have a conversation with anyone if I know there's sort of a serendipity upside to it, right? And so talking with you, I know it's not going to be the normal conversation. You're not going to ask me what's the default path and why did I quit my job? We're probably going to explore stuff that's going to ignite new connections for me and things like that. And so that's always been the podcast for me. I interview people that I am just I want to learn things and they're going to accelerate my learning. And that's been it for me. The big challenge, the podcast, it's time consuming. It takes a lot of energy and you have to schedule it in your calendar. And with a kid, I've just really struggled to keep it up. But I think my approach at this point is just sort of do podcast episodes whenever it feels right and whenever it's emergent.
And also, it seems like you've been doing a little bit more that's like, I used to really like the term, like, and I think I'm embodying it some too, but like free range podcasting, which is like, it seems like you've been creating some episodes that are like, all right, here's, related to the
I
book,
love
or
that.
I think that I got
That's
that
just
term.
a way of saying slacking or lazy.
It's like
I
I internalize it as like, I
love
you
that.
can create your own show. Like you're just like, you do what you want to
This
do.
is the title of this episode, a free range conversation.
With two free range podcasters.
No, that's great. I think this is something you've seen this in the last, when did you start your podcast? I think around the same time as me, 2017.
2018 for me.
Yeah, and like we were still using Skype tools probably, and like it was disaster. Internet was so bad, and back then it really had to select for I want to do this, I care about it, it's interesting, because there was no money in podcasting. There was no path to follow. There were some playbooks around launch you could follow, but pretty much like everyone was like, why would you do a podcast? That's so silly. Why would anyone talk to you? Now it's become a thing. Now there are all these like chiseled male entrepreneurs that are just beautiful humans, but like they're crushing it, making out so much money. And like there's now this like playbook, and people come into podcasting with, oh, I need to do XYZ. I need to copy this format and do it like that. And in fact, it's a free medium. You can literally do whatever you want. It's actually making me think I should experiment more. I always think about experimenting more with my podcast. I just never do it. Like, there's nothing stopping me from just like singing a song for a minute and shipping that as a podcast episode, right?
Or bring in 4 people on, or 10 people, or you
Yeah.
know.
I saw Anna Gatt did this recently on her podcast. She had like 9 people just recapping the year and did a bunch of themes. And it's great because I realized, oh, that's for her. She wants to do that because that's enriching and enlivening for her. And why not? I actually just invited Johnny Miller and Michael Ashcroft to do an episode with me next week. And Johnny's been someone that's basically been like side by side with me for 8.5 years on this journey. And so we never do podcasts because we just talk offline and just like we ne it feels weird to turn a friendship into a podcast, but I realized like, oh, this is probably really cool to share because it's such a unique connection behind the scenes. And same with Michael.
Yeah, and I'm sure you two will take it. You know, there's a certain approach, I think, when like the mics are turned on, that just like kind of sh like, oh, this is for someone else, or like let's think about that a little bit more, as opposed to just like really fast like j yapping and like just, I think, pause a little bit or think a little bit before you speak, I think happens on podcasts. But hey, I don't know, you haven't done it yet, so. But there was you and Johnny, there was one episode that you guys did, like
We did
four.
one.
Yeah, that
We
was a
did
really
one
good
on each
episode.
other's podcasts. Yeah, I think it was 3, yeah, 4 years ago. Yeah, on my podcast. Yeah, it's very good because it was, yeah, I think we've just like seen a lot. Like we both really started with like totally lost. We're both single. We both met our wives along the way. We both like got to see each other like figure all that out. He's having a kid now, and so like yeah, it's just feel really lucky to have met someone like him so early on the journey.
I also like podcasts as like timestamps almost. Like I look at
Yeah.
the catalog and I'm like, oh, I remember what was going on at that time, or oh, I remember like what I was thinking about, or oh yeah, I haven't talked to that person in a while, and you know, like that's super, like just like this, right? We went back, we're like, wait, 2021, and like, wow, okay. And there's something about that that I really like too, and it's just, you know, that's the, and you can just tap into those conversations and you can go back and listen and be like, wow, my voice has changed. I'm way more comfortable or way more confident now. Or there's just like, so yeah, for me it's just like a creative journal that's like just like public almost, with like people that I'm meeting along the way, or people I'm curious about, inspired by, or like who are kind of in my orbit, et cetera. Or, you know, yeah.
Yeah, it's I've had so many interesting things happen. I early on my second episode was actually this mentor, this guy I really looked up to in New York, and he passed away last year. Tragic situation, I had a heart attack, passed away, and the craziest thing happened when he passed away is people started Googling him for the obituary. And so my podcast went to the top. And so I had people from his life, all phases of his life, reaching out and listening to the episode and saying like, oh, this is giving me like comfort. It's so great to have this artifact, like him talking about these things. And yeah, it's just really cool to have that. Is also nice for me just to listen back. Like it was really hard. Like he was such a big supporter early on my journey. He was sort of like my pseudo father of on the pathless path. Like anytime I was unsure about things, I would call him up. He would just encourage me, root for me. He always bought my stuff, no matter how terrible it was early on. And like, yeah, so it's really cool to have those artifacts. And I remember in 2018, the first few episodes, how unsure I was, how much of a fraud I felt like, how silly I felt. I was still in Boston and didn't have any creator friends yet, like
Yeah.
zero. I was working at a I had one person actually. Yeah, I had like one person I connected with, Stephen Worley. I don't know if you've
Yeah,
heard of this guy.
he's been on my pod. It was like episode
Yeah. He's since like
22, 20,
retired.
22,
He's
20.
since retired from the internet, but I had a call with him right around when I was starting my podcast, and he was really the only person I knew doing anything like what I was doing or heading toward. And he told me, go to World Domination Summit. He's like, you'll find the other people. That was Chris Guillebeau's conference. I ended up meeting like all sorts of people. That's where I met Johnny. And then I moved to Taiwan right after that conference. And so everything sort of emerged after that. But yeah, I do wonder what role the podcast had. This has sort of turned into like a podcast nostalgia show, but it'll be more interesting to have another podcast with you 20 years from now and look back and be like, or our AI bots can do it with each other.
that I mean one of the I'll just like kind of close out this thread, but like yeah, one of the things that I really like about the pod is also is like I don't know if we talked about this, but I lost my dad right after college, and like I used to really love like car rides with him and just like deep conversations with him, et cetera. And then like as I became an adult, you know, I didn't have his wisdom, so to speak. And so like I've really you know, utilized the pod as a way to keep learning from people, et cetera. People, you know, with more expertise, older, et cetera. And I've definitely kind of like looked at the pod as like that just like wisdom, so to speak. And like I would have loved to have like an episode with my dad, you know, and like hearing you talk about have that episode with a now late mentor, like that's like I don't know, it got me like the feels a little bit, man.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think knowing that story, it now connects to me having this feeling like, oh, David's probably never going to stop. Because I think you probably have a deeper motivation. I think for me too, this whole creator economy, I sort of felt intellectually lonely in my 20s. I was in places like New York and Boston, but didn't have friends like you. And I would read, I would want to have deep discussions. I would have friends. I remember, like, I'm like, oh, I just got to like hang out with them, ask them to hang out and like have these great conversations. But other people didn't prioritize this kind of time in their lives and just increasingly felt lost and lonely. And I think coming to the internet and sharing ideas, writing online, all these curiosity conversations I did early on, I was like, oh my God, I found my people. And that was really the motivation, is to like find friends, find the other hyper curious humans. And now it's just wild. Like,
What do you mean by that?
I don't have to put in much effort to find anyone in like most parts of the world now, which is just like, it's crazy. Like, I just feel so blessed. And so that's where a lot of my motivation to help others along the way and connect others and bring others along comes from. It's just like, man, I've achieved like everything beyond my dreams. None of my goals were never like financial success. And so being able to make friends who want to like think deeply about life and the world and connect generously and create anywhere in the world with like an email now is like such a blessing and a gift. And so a big part of my life now, I think, is just about how do I bring others along? How do I serve others? And I don't think I'm great at that yet, beyond small pockets, but it's something I'm definitely leaning into.
Well, I've been the beneficiary of it. And yeah, thanks again for the intro to Will Manin. And I mean, I think like with your community, I think you've been extremely generous with it and the way, and I don't know the details of the pricing tiers, et cetera, but I feel like there's been so many different times you've just been like, okay, you're grandfathered, or hey, if like, if you're thinking about money, but, and I don't want to like, get you in trouble here, but I just think like, I just for the record, like your generosity is really like felt and seen, and I think there's just many times it's just like, oh, that's Paul just being like so generous. And so, yeah, I wanted to like let people know that it's true.
I think there's two sides to that. I think one side of that is some insecurity about I don't want people to think I'm ripping them off or taking advantage of them. Right. And so I think early on, I was very scared to charge money and do things like that early on. Eventually, I realized showing up from that fear, insecurity is just going to hold myself back. And actually, not serve the people I actually want to help. And a lot of people want to generously support me and encourage me to keep going and pay for things and keep me like financially viable, especially like with a kid now. And so the second part of that is just I see generosity as a practice. And so every time I sort of ask myself the question, what's the most generous way of doing this? I'm trying to formulate new ideas and new experiments to like lean into that discomfort and sort of like transcend it and move away from it being an insecurity and being like, I do want to just serve people because it's right and it's good and it feels good. It's really hard though. Like, I think, yeah, I mean, like the community is not really like financially viable. I think this year it might have made like $1,000 after like paying a contractor I was helping run it and then Circle for the platform fee. And so I don't know what the trade-off is like one question in my mind is like, okay, if you are really serving people and doing it in a generous way and not going to like turn this into a job for yourself, should it just be this thing that's sort of just low key and people can opt into and it doesn't scale? Or is the better way to serve people like taking this more seriously, aiming higher, raising the stakes, and expanding the sphere? And I don't really have a good answer. I mean, I'd love your thoughts on this because I think there is some merit to the idea that like I should try to scale like a community or at least grow it because people do benefit from meeting other people. And so, having sort of like a container where people can do that, just really cool. Like, people could potentially get married by meeting through my group or find business partners or become lifelong friends. I mean, this has already happened through the community, which is wild. Like, I think India and Caitlin are living together through my book and community. So, I don't know. What are your thoughts on all this? I mean, you've just left your job and leaning into these questions too. I think it's hard to think about.
I don't know. Well, like, which part is it? Like, are you asking about like generosity? You're asking about the community stuff? Or are you asking about like the pricing? Are you asking about
Yeah, I mean, what's the trade-off between? I think certain things, it's easy to make money from certain things in certain ways. I think there's a model for a community that you charge a higher recurring price and devote more attention and services to it. That might serve more people, help more people, and serve more people that are already in the community. The second option is sort of have it be like my current stance, which is like, okay, there is a price. It is right now it's $150. And so you get access forever. But there's not much promise of like an offering. And like Paul's just like really bad at like following through on things consistently.
But it's super active
But
in the WhatsApp. And
No, I know. And I think I'm redefining like what that value is. And so I think part of it is just like saying what it is and more clearly communicating that. But it could just be like, I'm not selling like a how to make money on the internet or like how to build a business. Those have bigger markets. So it could just be like the pathless community has a smaller market and it's grows slowly and that's fine.
yeah. Well, and then maybe there's like some, like program to help people get on the pathless program, and this ties into what, like, I wanted to bring up our curiosity com our unofficial curiosity conversation. So, like, you've been doing these curiosity conversations since it was like 2017 to 2022, right? Or it's like, I think that's
Yeah.
on like on your website. It sounds like you've done like over 400 of them. It was in a period where I was doing one unplanned phone call for every day, and then I saw, I was like, oh wait, I knew that Paul had this, like, and I just was like, there's something about also like when you're in, like inertia was hap like movement was happening, and I was like, okay, like I knew you did it before, but it was like something about the fact that I was doing phone calls with people that I'm like, okay, maybe Paul, like maybe I should do this too. And then on that call, you were like,
Love that.
on the call, you were like, hey man, like, I think you should. I told you, I was like, hey, like, I'm thinking about maybe like transitioning a little bit. And you're like, I think you should go for it. You were like, you, like, in New York with like everything that you built up. And this also ties into like what we talked about in the beginning. You were like, look, man, like, you have a track record. Like, there's people that have ideas or want to take a
Yeah.
leap, but like, they don't have traction, or they haven't put in the reps. Like, you've put in the reps. Like, I believe in you. Like, and this, I want to talk about like leap capital and belief capital and stuff like that. But yeah, that's that, and that curiosity conversation. And then you're like, I'm gonna introduce you to Will. And yeah, so two parts. One was like, do you remember that conversation of ours?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I haven't done a ton this year, so of course I remember it. I think one thing I've noticed, I've probably had 500 plus what I'd call like curiosity informal conversations with people over the last 7 years or so. And there is a certain kind of person that must find their own way, that is resourceful, that is resilient, that doesn't lead with like excuses or why they can't do things. And these people always like figure it out. Like they're still like 7 years on their own journey working for themselves, despite you being like, I have no idea how they make money, but they're just still figuring it out, right? And so the reason I understand that person and see that in you is because it's just me too. Like this is something people don't understand about me is I'll literally do anything to keep going. If I have to go be a bartender at a bar in Taiwan, like fine, not a big deal. It's just like you're art, and for you're already like living that life. I'm sure you get this all the time that many people probably already thought you were self-employed. Yeah. And so you were sort of like LARPing as a self-employed person while having a job, which is exactly what I recommend to people. People are like, oh, what do you say to the person that has a mortgage and family and all these expenses? How do they quit and do their own thing? And I'm like, they shouldn't. Like, they should host an event or start a creative project or take a day off and wander and sit with themselves for a full day and see what emerges. But you have been doing that for like 10 years already. You were like overcooked.
But so in your article, thanks for all that,
Leap
but
capital.
yeah, in that you said there's a line says like, people were able to replace a default story about what they should be doing with an alternative story.
Yeah, you do need, this is what I've found over and over. Everyone needs a story, and everyone's story is different because You can't just say to yourself, oh, I'm quitting and it's reckless and silly. You need some positive story that's saying I'm moving towards something. I'm moving toward the life I want. I'm moving toward a period of exploration and that's worth it. I'm moving toward a sabbatical and that's going to help me come back to myself. I'm moving toward a path where I can potentially make more money, something like that. Because everyone has a default story about what they're supposed to be doing in their life. And so, yeah, leap capital is about the money. You typically do need some sort of like money connection to that story, which says, okay, I have 30 grand. I spend 3 grand a month. That gives me 10 months. If I go to zero, I'll just go back and get a job. I'll hit the panic button at around month six, but the first 5 to 6 months are exploration, and other people have done this, so it's not a crazy thing. I'm just gonna do that. I'm gonna call it a life MBA or something. Somebody told me this, emailed me this recently that they're calling it a 1 year life MBA. And that framing is great because then it's a story you can tell other people. It's sort of like a force field because you will get critics. People will dump their insecurities onto you. Oh, what about healthcare? What about pay? Aren't you worried about this? What about retirement? Are you going to stop saving? Are you like all these fears people just dump. They dump it on you and they want you to handle it because you're triggering them. And so they say, it's your fault. Take all my fears and insecurities. And so the story is like, whew, pushes it away and says, well, here's my story. And they're like, oh, okay, makes sense for you. Makes sense for you. And then for like the small portion, they're like, oh, I like that story too. I want to take it.
It is funny about other people's insecurities. But I do
They're
think
infinite.
the story is so powerful. I mean,
What's
like,
your what was your story?
I think the story was a combination of like, one, you were believing in me, and I was like, I think there's credibility to this. I think that like
I say this, no offense, but I'm like telling everyone to quit. No, but yeah, that it is true. I have seen hundreds of people. You are part of the people that are gonna make it. And like, so I am sort of like a pathless expert because like I only meet pathless people now, so I can sort of assess like who's wired for it.
And I think there was like the way that you were kind of like arming me with knowledge and arming me with confidence, and was like, hey, no, here's these data points. Or like, if you created this business model, we could get that funded. Like, if I'm sure there's people that you know that if you went to them and you said, hey, I need like X so that I can do this, and like, it's connected to events and community, and people want to be a part of that. So, and like, they want more of that in the world. So, there's probably some people that would like, be a part of that. And I was like, oh, like I hadn't like that's different. And so then it like was giving me more confidence around this stuff. I think like what was the main thing? It was a confluence of things. I think it was like it felt like it was time. Like I had been in the role for 4 years. It felt like there was like I was starting to see some like momentum in other areas, or people were kind of reaching out to me about kind of more opportunities. I think like just I felt like there wasn't as much growth in the role anymore.
Yeah.
Like the
What was the
role.
money equation? Did you have some formula that was like, I have this much saved, it costs this much to live?
The money equation was like, I guess candidly, it was like, I mean, I'm grateful for the money that I got. I don't think I was getting paid like, I think people said to me like, you're underpaid right now. Like, so like if you were to find another job, it would be higher than where you are. And I was like, okay. And I think it was like, yeah, like it didn't. I've lived very frugal. I've been in the same apartment. I,
Yeah.
as you can see here, I don't have any fancy furniture
Did
or
you
like,
calculate runway though?
no, not really.
See, this is another reason why I think you'll make it is because I'll talk to Google employees who have like millions in the bank, and they have detailed spreadsheets and their runway, and they're like, I just can't retire right now because they're calculating for like stopping work forever, and they need like 12 years of runway plus like private schools for their kids and like generational wealth that they can pass down in inheritance. And like many people who are like destined for a more pathless existence just like don't actually care about money that much.
But I am very driven though. Like,
That's
and
no, what I mean is like you could make more money. You could go do things just for money. You could have m tried to monetize your podcast. You're smart enough to know those paths, but like that's not the life you want to live, right? And so money is not primary. It's probably like for me, like I like making money. I want to succeed and like make a lot of money with my books, with the things I do, but secondary, like subordinate to the life I want to live.
And what's the story that you're telling yourself now about the life that you want to live and like the steps that you're taking a part of that life? Like, if, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're like 8.5 years into this, 7.5 with my wife, and so it feels very normal to us. I think one thing we've realized is that when we see life as a problem to be solved, we both get stuck and frustrated. So an example of this is before we moved back to the US, we had a locate like we're we had this idea like we need to pick a location. And all the tension resolved when we were like, well, we can just pick a location for now. We can just find a sublet in Austin, and then if we don't like it, we can just go somewhere else. We didn't have kids at that point, so it was like, oh yeah, of course. Like we've already been living like that. Why not? And so I think we've shifted toward questions, thinking about life as questions and experiments, which would frustrate the hell out of some people. Some people just want to like permanently solve the question. But I think Angie and I love living the question, if this makes sense. And so what I mean by this is the question is, what does a life look like with two location independent people work-wise from two different countries with families and different with a child in the modern world? That's really exciting for me. And so January to May next year, we are participating in what's called the Traveling Village. It's a self-organized group of 20 families, which are going to live in three different locations in Asia. And that is a way of living into the question. Now, we expect in those 3 months, lots of potential future questions or future experiments will emerge. And so life is just a continuous, like a tiny experiment to borrow Anne-Laure Lecompte's phrase. And so we're very comfortable living in this way because we have 7.5 years experience of living in this way. And it's really fun and it keeps working. But I'm not like ideologically tied to like being this floating person. It's just like this is working for now. We're going to keep going in this way and just see what continues to emerge.
What are those, what, like, how frequent do you and Angie have these kind of questions and conversations about, like, are we living the question? Should we try this? Should we do that? Like, yeah, how does that come up?
We're sort of always talking about these things. I think, yeah. I mean, we don't have a place to live after in 12 days from now. But we know where we're going to be a
In
month from
January,
now. We're going to be in Vietnam. So there's just a gap. But yeah, so like in the short term, we're talking about that. We're trying to figure it out. But there's some other things we're balancing. But yeah, so it's an ongoing conversation. I think with the traveling village next year, we have this block of like 5 to 6 months that's sectioned off. A lot has been anchored by like having kids. We want to have another kid. So if we have another kid, it's going to be, we're probably going to have it in Taiwan. So that's going to sort of dictate where we live. And yeah, I'm always thinking about these things. I think Andy's always thinking about it. I think it's very fun for us and it works for us. We're two very off the spectrum weirdos, though. And so
What do you mean
I
by
think
that?
people get
What's an
caught
example
up.
of
People
that?
get caught up when, well, I mean, this is just totally terrifying for some people. People would be like, well, how can you do this with kids? And so this feels very normal for us. Like our daughter's pretty grounded. We have like a stable routine. We have a very, very boring home life. But for other people, how could you not have a home? How could you not have a plan? Aren't you worried about school? Aren't you worried? It's all the insecurities and stuff. And so we don't have those fears and insecurities. That's the thing people don't understand about us, right? But in replacement of that, like you were saying, we do have these stories. For me, the story is, okay, if I break even for paying my cost of living each year, that is success. That's one story I have for work. The other story is we won't go anywhere for less than a month. So we have to go somewhere for at least a month. The other stories are like a routine helps us keep grounded. Like you pretty much have to have a routine with a young child. Yeah, and different things like this.
Yeah. It really is so like, and I know you've written about this a bunch, but like, it really like, it's cliche, but like, the stories we tell ourselves like
Yeah.
really do freaking matter.
Well, this is my book. The Pathless Path was me writing myself into a new story. The subtitle is Imagining a New Story for Work and Life.
Yeah.
That is personal. That was for me because when I quit my job, I just felt this tension from the default path stories have become so strong. People are convinced it is like a fundamental truth of the universe, like so deeply. And it was very clear to me, no, that is not true. It is not a fundamental truth. It is a helpful narrative for you in your life right now, but it is not a fundamental fact of life that humans must be continuously employed in adulthood and always be marching upward. And so my idea was I need to write a book to write a different story, an alternative to the default path. It is not what many hustle bros are promising online now of escape the default path, make more, reclaim your agency, make like triple your salary, right? No, it is an alternative for people that can't make the default path work for themselves. And so the trap in many of these things is rejecting the default path and creating the default path just in an entrepreneurial box, right? We see that all over. I mean, that's like all of like, I mean, I think you see that a lot in New York, mostly because there's a cost of living crisis, but also there's just all these status games that people want to play, right? They become an author and then they're on the circuit. They're performing the role of an author. To me, that's just like the default path reimagined as like an author or a creator or a podcaster or an entrepreneur. It's like this craving for achievement above all else.
And then the story with good work, like what was the, if the pathless path was a story around reclaiming, what's the story with good work?
Yeah, so there's part of the work relationship in Pathless Path. Like I call it the real work of your life in the Pathless Path. That's one of the chapters. And the idea was the real work of your life is consciously searching for the work you actually want to be doing. And so what I felt people didn't quite understand is that I was looking at work very, very broadly. My journey was wanting to escape work in New York, being like, work's terrible, work's breaking us, work's broken. What I didn't realize at the time is it wasn't working for me, and I needed to find myself. So I rejected work to leave work to create space to then come back to work. And it was in Taiwan 7 years ago, sitting at a laptop most mornings, typing and being like, this is delightfully fun. And I loved writing. And it took me a while to accept that that is the work worth doing for me. And so, what you're feeling in the pathless path, and what many people are feeling, is that energy coming through. But I didn't explicitly talk about that relationship I developed with work and how I've built my entire life around protecting that connection I have to work. And how that is sort of like an energy and fuel source for my life. And so, people will say to me, oh, you could make a lot of money by selling your book to a traditional publisher and going on a speaking tour. And it's like, yes, you're right. But that might risk my entire relationship to writing. Way too risky. I've found something I think is like deeper, more meaningful, and likely lasting. It's sort of like the secret of the universe that many people have found throughout history. And I think it's valuable and worth protecting.
The secret of the
I think
universe
it's what you
is
have.
yeah.
It's very clear it's what you have with your podcast.
Say more about
Nobody makes it to 400 episodes
that.
unless it is their good work. You can't make it to 400 episodes of a podcast unless it is your good work.
Says Paul Millard. I just got my, that's my testimonial right there.
Well, it's true. Like, why? You must know this.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I just keep going and I find a way to like mold it to
And so
my life. Yeah.
have you had a big gap when you stopped the podcast for a while?
None. I have never stopped it.
Like, have you taken a couple weeks off?
Like last Christmas and New Year's
Yeah.
was the longest time, and it was like 2.5 weeks. And then when I came back in the beginning of this year, I was like, it's like I feel off, and it was like, oh, I
Yes,
haven't.
exactly. That's exactly what I knew. That's exactly what people experience. So this happens if I don't write for a while. I feel like a little unbalanced. And then as soon as I get back to writing, I'm like, ah, yes.
Yeah,
And
it's the
so
tension. It's the tension of like setting this email, hosting this event with the podcast, like that,
and
like.
it's a positive tension. And
Yeah.
so I think this is one of the secrets of work, which is hidden from so many people because we have these stories that work must suck. Work is a grind, work is a struggle. And so most people can relate to this. I feel bad that I'm not working. Oh, I'm on vacation for my company. I feel like I should be checking in. It's that negative tension. But there's a positive tension of like, I need to write, like, something's off in my life. I'm not like connecting to this mode of creative, and it's typically creative work, which is powerful for people. But the reason I wrote the book is because I was really struggling with it after having a kid. And I needed to figure out, why does this matter to me so much? Why am I struggling so much when I'm not writing consistently? How do I find my flow again, given the constraints? And I just needed to tell people like why this matters to me so much. And I think good work is more powerful than the pathless path. It's just inherently less shareable, and I don't think the book will ever be that successful unless I like rename and repackage it.
What do you mean it's more powerful? Just like it's
The people it finds, people have very strong reactions to it. They
stronger than
become so
stronger
sure.
than Pathless Path?
Yeah. So
Whoa.
people will just like, yeah. I mean, do you know Jason Levin?
Yeah. Meme Lord?
Yeah, so he immediately quit his job upon reading the book and went all in on the meme software he's now running. Like a single moment.
Wow.
It pivoted like so hard. Yeah, my friend Sky like fired his biggest client immediately. He didn't even finish the book. Somebody emailed me a few weeks ago. They're like, "Oh, I'm quitting and going all in on like my good work." And so I think it's sort of like it's probably a smaller group of people that like are looking for that nudge, and it's specifically tied to a certain kind of work. Pathless Path is more about sort of an unconventional life more broadly. Good work is about a very specific kind of work and a specific relation to it for a certain kind of person. But when these people read it, they're like, "Good God, he is describing everything I know to be true."
It's kind of like a Stephen Pressfield, like War of Art kind of thing.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah, and so maybe there is more potential. I think I'm still gonna play with good work, I think, in the future. Maybe there's like a different title for it. Different subtitle, it could be a different cover even. But yeah, I'm just gonna keep promoting and talking about it. But yeah, people just love the Pathless Path. It outsells good work still. I only get like reach outs from podcasts to talk about the Pathless Path.
I mean, it, yeah, I mean, the market, we can't predict what the market, like how the market
You
will respond.
were one of the people that made me realize the Pathless Path, something was happening with the Pathless Path. You messaged me that you saw someone on the subway reading it,
Yeah.
and you had no idea who they were.
Correct. And that was
And
like
this,
within a week or something like that. It was like so fast.
that was one of the first clues that was like something weird is happening. And I kept having like all these random clues. Now, the great thing about my book launch is that I didn't do a book launch. And immediately after launching the book, I took a consulting gig with Andrew Barry. Do you know
Yeah,
Andrew
yeah,
Barry?
yeah, yeah. He's been on the show, yeah.
So I'm doing a consulting gig working for like an old, outdated like HR benefits corporation. And I'm getting all these signals from people. I'm getting texts from you. I'm getting crazy long messages from people I've never met about the Pathless Path. And it took me 3 to 4 months until I think from like January to May, the book didn't sell like that crazy. I'm selling more like this month of the regular version of the book than I did my first month and the first few months. But it was all these things. It was like, okay, something's happening. I'm working in this consulting gig. I do not want to be doing consulting. This is not my good work. And so coming out of that, I basically was like, I don't even care. I'm just going to go all in on the Pathless Path because the responses from people. And so this has been one of my common themes throughout my path is waiting for the invitation. Whenever I try to force things or go do things without audience signal or a signal from people in my life, I sort of create tension for myself. I run into roadblocks. Things don't really work. But when I wait for the invitation and react to that, that's when everything in my life flows.
Yeah, I mean, it was like for me, taking my leap, there was like you and there's a couple other people that were like, you've got this. Like, what are you waiting for? Like, they're like, if we have this conversation in a couple more months, like, I'm gonna be pissed at you. And I'm like, like, no, I'm gonna be pissed at you. And then there was, I think, like a rewiring, like eventually, but there was those kind of conversations and that kind
When
of
did
like, yeah.
you leave?
The last day was like September 5th.
Okay. And
I
so
had like a month. Yeah.
you're 3 months in. Have
Yeah.
you made money, found
Yeah.
clients,
Yeah.
found projects?
Yeah.
Have you made more than you were making before?
Yeah. 1 month, yeah.
This is so easy to predict.
We'll
And
see how long it
so
lasts.
now
Yeah. Yeah.
let me
Yeah.
that's a total that's a I'm not gonna dismiss that because that's real. And I still have that feeling. Like, how long is this gonna last? I think that's just like you're tapping into the inherent uncertainty of the world. And people will tell you, like, oh, you're gonna be fine. People always say that. I think it's silly to say that because, like, what you're feeling, how long will this last? That's real. But I'm not surprised you've found a lot of success. I would guess, let me guess, that your biggest challenge now is, oh, I'm making money in these ways, and I'm having like too much interest from other people doing projects that could pay me money, but now I want to think deeper and move toward work that feels more sustainable and exciting. Or you're already there yet? You
No,
already there?
I think no, like I like the work that I'm doing. I'm not sure how long these ones are gonna last for, these kind of contracts are gonna
Yeah.
last for. Candidly, I think there was a moment where it was like, I feel that I am busy. I really like the work, but it felt like I wasn't building on my own as much as I was before. So there was a little bit.
Freelancing?
So like when I had my job, I actually was like
Yeah.
building stuff on the side that like I was doing like mini conferences on my own. I was like,
Got
like
it.
my own like bigger projects or my own bigger events.
So that's
Now,
faded away now.
yeah, now it's been like all that type of
Yeah.
stuff is like going towards, so like all my free time is like going towards this,
Yeah. That makes sense. This is why I write in Good Work that freelancing is often an in-between transitional sort of work, right? So I think for many people, it's proof of being able to make it. You've already proven that you're making more than you used to make. And so I imagine that didn't even take much effort to land a few gigs. And so
I mean, you
I think
helped.
what happened.
I
Yeah, but like you didn't even try that hard. Like, did you even email like your podcast list or network to like try to find gigs? Like, you haven't even tapped your resources yet.
emailed a couple of people. Yeah, there's
Yeah.
definitely more. There's more. There's room. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I mean, you do need time. Basically, time on path gives you
Yeah.
more confidence. So you
Yeah.
can't speed run that. But like 3 years from now, you'll probably have several periods where, like, oh, I'm not making any money. Put in a little effort or energy. You land some projects. You gain confidence that you can keep doing that. Right. And so that just takes time and sort of practice to go through. I think the bigger challenge is what you're naming is how do I balance doing those projects versus the creative energy? And so that is like my puzzle of good work chapter in Good Work, which is okay, how do I design certain kinds of paid work to fund the creative work without undermining the energy I need to do the creative work? And so for me, the good work is writing. I'm working on drafts of books. I'm working on essays for my Substack. I don't really make money from those. I don't know if a future book will make money. I've only made about $5,000 profit on good work, even though that was a majority of my work time for about 10 months. And it's been out in the world for a year. ROI financially, not great, but like energy-wise, it was part of the life I actually want to live. So that worked. And I did other stuff along the way to fund that journey. And so, yeah, playing with different ways of setting up projects, you can do like, you might want to think about like doing event-only projects. So you could go like all in on a 3-day event and charge $20,000. But then every time you do one of those events, the next 3 months are like creative build time and like playing with different seasons and structures. And yeah, it just takes time to figure it out.
If you're listening and you've got that, hit me up about that. 3-day 20K event. I'm open to chatting about that.
But you could create that. So this is one exercise I encourage people to do working on their own. Start with your dream project that fits into your life perfectly. Define it, price it, and then work backward. So what is the $20,000 project that you could deliver? What is the David Nabinsky 10 out of 5 stars experience? I think Airbnb has this example where they just keep going up the stars. And so if somebody's making $1 million from a conference, paying you 20,000 is nothing. But like, you don't want to offer a $20,000 project to me. I can't afford that. That's like making me lose money. So
But for
yeah, it's all
someone,
about what?
but for someone, some the
Right,
mil yeah.
exactly. And so figuring out what those clients are. For me, it took me years of iteration to figure out that companies have a budget for training sessions and that I could charge a high price and I could do it in a finite way and I could package it and have a price for it. And I've done two this year, but they're high priced and short, and I know I'm really good at them, such that it's like an easy yes. The few days before and like time after that day, like I'm off, like I'm like I don't create, I sort of am a blob those weeks, but the other like 51 weeks are still like mine.
These questions in this practice, that's all in good work.
Yeah. I can send you some good copies of good work. But yeah, it's also I have a freelance course. It's in the community. I don't know if you've ever seen this. I don't
No,
really promote it, but I
I haven't.
have a lot of different ways of thinking about projects and pricing and structuring and all these things.
Okay, cool. I'll check that out. Anything else you think we should definitely talk about?
I don't know. What do you want to talk about?
I mean, I love this free range podcast episode already. There was a thread that I was c curious about, and I think it was from Andrew Taggart, but this idea around like total work and like everything is work and stuff, and I know that we've I think I commented once about that, but I'm not sure if you wanted to. I guess that's the only thing
It's
that is one
sort
thing that
of
I've. Yeah, go ahead.
What we talked about before, me wanting to reject work, only to find it again in new form. And so the only thing that's changed is my stance toward work. I don't see work as something that's special. I also am not attached to an identity with my work. Like, I don't really care about being an author, an impressive achiever, having credentials. I don't care about book awards. Like, I don't care about any of that. And so that was not true of my previous path. I was in a paradigm and acting as a person that really did care about successful companies and having a growing salary. And so Andrew Taggart's initial writings around total work were naming the problem with the default path, which is not the work itself, it's the stories and narratives we attach to it, right? So a career is a first person narrative about your actions in the world. I don't have a career. I just have a bunch of stuff I do. And so it's this obsession with I need a career. I need to keep proving myself. I'm a bad person if I don't keep achieving, growing, increasing my salary every year, have a clear story around it. And so I still have stories around my life to sort of make sense of my life, but I don't have a story for the world that I need to prove myself anymore. So Andrew Taggart's newer writing around seeing work as like mundane and just breaking it down. We're not podcasters, we're literally just chatting. This is like work, like we're doing stuff and we can attach different stories to it. We could literally attach the story to like, oh, we're grinding. You could attach the story of like, I'm grinding my way to 1,000 episodes. I work harder than everyone else. I'm suffering. And in fact, if you did that, you'd probably get more attention because so many people have that insecurity and gravitate to those stories. But you're not. You're sort of approaching it with like a lightness. This is just something I do. This is just part of my life. And so it's when we attach the stories, we create a lot of the suffering. A lot of creatives have this story of like, I deserve to be paid for my creations. It's like, no, you don't. Like, nobody deserves to be paid for anything at like the most basic level, right? We can expect things within certain constraints and paradigms, but I'm not changing a diaper. Like, I am not writing to like for anything or for a story. It's just stuff I do. It's all worth like using for material to like assess what we're doing in our lives. And so I think so much comes downstream of like elevating the, oh, I am working for my family. I am sacrificing at this laptop on in stroke, like doing keyboard work. And that is more noble than me at home taking care of my daughter. It's like, no, like making dinner, cleaning the floor, like watching my daughter is all just work. Just like tapping at a keyboard is work.
So well said. And then, so we talked about pathless path. We talked about good work, and then, but obviously, with pathless path, there's your good work is the premium version, right? And then, newsletter, all that kind of
Yeah, I
stuff. People
think,
can find you.
yeah, I mean, the hardcover was sort of a bet on like against a lot of the common stories of being an author. The story of being an author is like, oh, you need a traditional publisher because that's how you get speaking gigs. That's how you make money. You get all the connections and the story. And it's like, well, what if we just try to make money from the book itself? That was the question I asked myself. And so, yeah, I think with everything I do, I'm always trying to explore the different edges and different possibilities for doing it in my own way and like enforcing that on the world. And yeah, if it works, fun. If it doesn't work, also fun. So yeah, it's been really cool to have that book out. People are really resonating with it. It starts shipping today, so I'm excited to for people to start receiving it. And I have no idea where this will take me, if it will like break even. I'm like 40% of the way there, but yeah, I'm having fun and still doing it.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Well, Paul, thanks for this conversation. I hopefully there's what did you say in the beginning? There's serendipity upside from the
Yeah, and there's no like expectations. I did this because there's value in the conversation itself, but
conversation.
yeah, you never know. If you're listening to this and you have a cool gig for David, reach out to him. If you have interesting thoughts to share with me, let me know as well.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, Paul. Really appreciate it.
Awesome.
Hey, friend. Thank you for listening to this Portfolio Career Podcast episode. I would love to hear what you learned or took away from this episode. I hope you find me, David Nabinsky, on Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Also, if you want the best insights from the podcast and to hear my learnings, please subscribe to my Portfolio Career Substack newsletter that I send out every 2 weeks. You can find that on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com/newsletter. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Thank you so much.